Good morning. Last people standing. The last people are the last case on our calendar for oral argument this morning is Flores, Fagry, Baker, Daniels versus Sorbalas et al. Counsel, while you're getting settled, there's just one of you or two of you, but making one argument, so you will have 15 minutes to make that argument. It's important that you state your name and identify the party you represent when you begin your argument because it's being recorded. And when you are ready, counsel, you may proceed.
Thank you. Good morning. May it please the court. I am James Volling from the law firm of Fagry Baker Daniels, and I represent the plaintiffs and class counsel who bring this matter before you. The convoluted procedural history of this case and its resolution is discussed in detail in our brief. The plaintiffs in this action were renters of residential housing units located in approximately 63 rental properties in the city of Minneapolis. The properties at issue contain more than 1,100 units, and when the class list was produced, it showed that there were 5,428 class members. Plaintiffs brought claims for violation of the Minnesota Consumer Fraud Act, the Minnesota Deceptive Trade Practices Act, the Landlord Covenants in Minnesota Statute Section 504B-161, the False Advertising Prohibition in MnStat Section 325F.67, as well as claims for civil conspiracy and a claim for injunctive relief pursuant to the Minneapolis Code of Ordinances. In essence, plaintiffs allege that defendants engaged in a fraudulent scheme to obtain rental licenses, which should thus be void ab initio, and therefore were not entitled to rent the properties at issue or to keep the rental income. Plaintiffs also contended that defendants engaged in a systematic and uniform management scheme for the properties that failed to maintain them as required by applicable health and safety laws, particularly with regard to asbestos, lead paint, and pest control. Further, one of the named plaintiffs brought a collateral action against the defendants, the nickel action, to prevent defendants' fraudulent transfer of assets to secure collectability of any eventual judgment. And counsel, class counsel, was heavily involved in that as well.
Well, there's no doubt in my mind that this was a major case, that, and you or your law firm obtained outstanding results on behalf of the class members. I don't think it was a question to the district court either. Given our, you know, the biggest challenge you have is the standard of review that you face on the issue of the amount of the attorney fee awards. What's your best argument in support of our decision that the district court abused its discretion?
Let me go there, Your Honor, because I think that's really the point. The standard of review here obviously is an abuse of discretion standard, but that standard is not code for unreviewable or unfettered or untethered discretion. As courts have noted, under an abuse of discretion standard, a lower court's determination can be overruled if it is based on an error in its view of the law or applies improper standards in a fees award, or where there is clearly erroneous conclusion that is against logic and the facts on the record. The case law regarding the application of this standard is cited on page 34 of our brief. Plaintiffs and class counsel contend that the district court, it was Chief Judge Berenson, who was standing in for Judge Vassily, who was on leave, abused its discretion in these ways. Failing to provide the clear explanation required by Minnesota state federal law as to why class counsel's requested fee was unfair or unreasonable. Two, failing to conform to or distinguish the Minnesota state and federal case law awarding fees at the level of one-third or more of a common fund in similar situations. Three, erroneously relying on empirical studies of certain fee awards published in academic journals and cited by a federal court in the Southern District of Texas, and in doing so, applying an inappropriate standard.
How is there case law that says it's not appropriate to look at a compilation of attorney fee award summaries?
I haven't found that case law, Your Honor, but I haven't found any case law that says it is. And the problem you have when you do it is that those cases that are compiled may be based upon different standards that aren't applicable in the state of Minnesota. We have a 7-factor test. Even in Heartland, the case, the Southern District case, there was a 12-factor test employed. But those, and I'm going to get to this, but the district court, I don't think should have used those studies, but if it did, it didn't use them in the right way. Four, reaching a conclusion that was counter to the facts on the record and even to the internal logic of its own ruling. And five, failing to properly employ or consider a lodestar cross-check that would have confirmed the reasonableness of class counsel's requested fee award, even though the district court had specifically requested and reviewed the billing records and found that they, quote, provide a reasonable and adequate description of the work actually performed. Now,
is there any precedent that requires the court to employ a lodestar comparison?
There's no, I don't think it has to, Your Honor, but it's done in so many cases. And the reason it's done is to ensure fairness.
Isn't the reason that we usually apply lodestar, though, is to make sure it's not too high?
That's correct, Your Honor, but also just to ensure fairness. And we've cited cases in our brief, Your Honor, where a lodestar, where there is a negative multiplier, if you will, a reduction from the lodestar, and those courts say that that reduction confirms the reasonableness of the requested fee. So the lodestar cross-check is there in a helpful way. And as you know, Your Honor, we took about a $1.5 million hit to our lodestar. Our lodestar was $7.488 million as of December 26, 2018. And it's grown because that was before all the litigation about failing to fund the settlement. And, of course, all the settlement administration we've had to do afterwards. So the lodestar is greater today. We were willing to take that because Faegre Baker Daniels was never interested in a windfall in this case. We were trying to hit the ball down the middle of the fairway. In other words, comply with case law that clearly suggested that 33%, roughly 33%, was reasonable.
But there's also case law that says 25% is reasonable.
It does, but in what context, Your Honor? In what context? You have to look at the particular cases. And so, and I'll get to the cases that I think are important here. Now, as you know, Your Honor, as the district court noted, we in Minnesota, looking at Yerington and In Re Excel, you look at seven factors. The benefit conferred on the class, which the district court obviously said was considerable, the risk to which plaintiff's counsel were exposed. We don't disagree there. We were
fully at risk.
In all
of the cases you've examined, have you found a case where an appellate court has reversed a 25% award as being too low?
I have not, Your Honor. I have not. I have not seen cases where, and I think the reason for that, Your Honor, is that I haven't found cases where a request like this is made and rejected. I've not seen it. And so I don't find cases overturning it because I haven't found that kind of decision in the first place.
So in most of the cases where there might be a reduction, it's because there's been objections by somebody.
Precisely. Right. There's been an objection by a class member. Right. Or it's so clear that the requested fee is so much higher than the lodestar. That's what happens in many of these class actions, Your Honor, is that they settle them. They settle them relatively early. They get a benefit for the class, but they have relatively little time right into the case. So a multiplier is applied to get to a percentage number that seems reasonable that will continue to incent lawyers to take on these kinds of cases. Here, again, a negative multiplier on the lodestar. And I think I can tell you, I mean, you look at paragraph 9 of the district court's conclusions about what had to be done here. You look at the table we included in our brief. This was not a simple case. It was, I've got a friend that likes to use the phrase, we had to fight like the third monkey trying to get on Noah's Ark. That's exactly what we had to do. Everything was contested at every single turn in this litigation. And it required a Herculean effort to do what was done here. So the third factor is the difficulty and novelty of the legal and factual issues. There we part company with the district court. The skill of the lawyers, that wasn't an issue. The time and labor involved, it was considerable. The district court recognized it. The reaction of the class, no issue there. There was no objection from the class. And finally, a comparison between the requested attorney percentage and percentages awarded in similar cases. There we do. So let me turn to
those. And don't the empirical studies, though, try to get to the fact that there aren't a lot of consumer class action case law or cases to review for comparison purposes?
Well, there were three of them in the District of Minnesota, Your Honor. So when the court said there was a paucity of case law, that just wasn't true. And those cases all awarded 33%. So let me take the factor about the difficulty and novelty of the legal and factual issues of the case. The district court did not dispute that this class action has no identifiable precedent, but nevertheless concluded that the claims are in fact not complex civil matters, but are applications of standard landlord-tenant law and were not sophisticated securities fraud claims. That's at paragraph 7. This finding of a lack of complexity is irreconcilable with the record and even with other findings in the district court's own decision, such as that the recovery, quote, has few, if any, precedents, both in size of recovery and in the claims pursued. That's at paragraph 5. Moreover, as the record clearly demonstrates, the fraud scheme here was complex and well hidden. The fraud scheme is described in detail beginning at page 9 of our brief. The legal and factual complexity of this matter are also well described in Judge Vassily's order certifying the class. Yes, Your Honor.
You argue that the fraud scheme was well hidden, but hadn't the city of Minneapolis undercovered a lot of the underlying facts regarding the fraud?
No, they did not.
Okay.
We did, and alerted the city of Minneapolis. That's the simple truth.
Okay, thank you.
The city of Minneapolis issued these licenses without knowing what Zarbalis' involvement was.
Well, they certainly brought an administrative action against
them. They did, in the wake of what we've learned. Absolutely, Your Honor. And so the order certifying the class noted that, quote, the class members are individuals with varying economic resources who may have significant difficulty funding the pursuit of these rather complex and unique claims, particularly against defendants who are sophisticated litigators with substantial resources, end of quote. The district court's finding of a lack of complexity is totally belied by paragraph 9 of its own findings and conclusions, which states that, and I quote, the substantial class settlement in this case was possible only because of class counsel's substantial investment of time and labor over the 2 years of this case, end of quote, and then describes those substantial efforts the class counsel made. Page 18 and 19 of our brief contain the chart of the key statistics related to this hard-fought litigation. There were 44 total motions, 18 oral arguments, 16 key court orders, 45 depositions, and over 210,000 pages of documents produced.
Why doesn't the fee awarded adequately represent the complexity of the case?
Because it's so much below our lodestar. Because our lodestar it was a cut to our lodestar of 38%. So if you're going to take 60% of what you invest in these cases, it's going to be very difficult to convince counsel to do that. That's the problem. So
the court, though, expressed a concern that the lodestar method created a temptation for lawyers to run up the numbers of hours for which they were paid. And clearly, your firm worked very hard on this case, and there were a lot of complicated issues. But, we're applying an abuse of discretion standard here.
I understand that, Your Honor.
How then did the district court err in its analysis of the lodestar issue?
Because it didn't do a cross-check. It dropped a footnote. It dropped a footnote in which it implicitly criticized us for having maybe too many lawyers at some hearings. Right? That's what the court did. Our lodestar is almost $1.5 million above the requested fee. So this is not a case where you can look at the lodestar and say, oh, we're coming in looking for a multiplier. We're not. We took a haircut from the beginning. But it required, remember, there were multiple defendants here. They all had teams of lawyers. They contested everything. And we treated this case just like any case we would treat for the best of our corporate clients. We pursued it vigorously and without any resource deprivation. We went at it hard because we cared about these people. So that's what's wrong with what the district did. So you've got the chart. These statistics don't reflect a simple civil action. The fact that this case arose out of landlord-tenant relationships doesn't make the case less complex, either legally or factually. And the district court's attempt to compare it negatively to, quote, sophisticated securities fraud claims is unavailing. Many securities fraud cases arise only in the wake of government enforcement actions or public filings. Here, however, class counsel had to blaze their own trail and engage in extensive investigation, utilize creative claims and theories of recovery that had never been utilized before, and litigate voraciously in order to achieve tremendous results for these class members. In short, the district court's conclusion that the claims here are not complex civil matters is illogical and wholly unsupported in this record, and therefore constitutes an abuse of discretion. Now let me turn to the other factor that we significantly disagree about, which is the comparison between the requested attorney fee percentage and percentages in similar cases. It's with regard to this key factor that we believe the district court abdicated its responsibility and failed to consider numerous comparable Minnesota state and federal cases that have awarded fees on a similar percentage basis as that requested by class counsel here. Those cases were cited to the district court in class counsel's motion papers seeking the fee award and are set forth again in our brief here at pages 42 to 45. In its findings and conclusions, the district court made no effort to discuss or distinguish these significant cases. Instead, the district court set forth in error a premise and then inappropriately relied on three empirical studies published in academic journals that were cited by a federal court in the Southern District of Texas in 2012 in the Heartland Payment Systems Customer Data Securities Breach litigation case. Of course, that Texas case has no precedential value here in Minnesota and is wholly inapposite in terms of its facts and its legal principles.
All right, counsel, you need to wrap up. You're a little bit over your time.
I'm sorry.
Give you another
I'm
minute.
Sorry. Let me just point out three cases quickly, if I can. First, Yarrington, which is cited by the district court and by us. It was a consumer fraud case. The claims involved alleged violations of the Consumer Fraud Act, the Deceptive Trade Practices Act, just like this case. It's a federal district court case. The total settlement achieved was $16.5 million, $2 million less than ours, and class counsel received 33% of that common fund. In order to get there, the court had to apply a 2.26 multiplier to get them their 33%. There's not a paucity of case law. There's case law that says our fee award should have been granted. Same thing with Caligieri and with Judge Vassily's own decision in the McClure case. In short, Your Honor, I'll just wrap up.
Before you wrap up, I have two real short questions.
Please, thank you, Your Honor.
The presider will allow me. This started out as a contingency fee, right?
Fully.
And this,
we were totally at risk.
What was the percentage of the contingency fee?
Our
agreement.
Our, and it's not in the record, Your Honor, but I will tell you that our agreements with the class representatives called for a 40% contingency.
There were 5,458 class members here?
Correct.
What did that break down to in terms of the settlement or terms of the result?
Well, here's the deal, I'll give you the statistics about exactly where the settlement is. We've sent out over $12,147,000 of checks so far in the first round of distribution. Over $10 million of that have been cashed to date. It's going to keep going. If people don't cash checks, the people who do will get the next round. The average check is $2,785.
Okay, that's my only question.
And the highest check is in the first round is $14,987. And I will tell you that money has made a difference. This isn't a coupon case. This isn't a discount case off your next rental payment. This is real cash right now, and it matters to these people. In short, Your Honor, we would just respectfully ask that the case be reversed. We believe that the district court erred and abused its discretion in refusing to grant our fee request of approximately 32% of the common fund. Thank you so much.
We agreed with you that it ought to be reversed. We reverse and remanded?
Well, Your Honor, that's an interesting question. My view of this is that you can look at the case law, you can look at the factors, and it suggests that the fee award, it should be remanded with instructions to grant it. But if you did remand, you would send it back, I think, for further procedures to look at the case law, to look at a cross-check, to consider. And in our brief, we talk about the use of those empirical studies. Remember, we had no opportunity before the district court to address the use of those studies. We were blindsided by it. They were wrongly utilized. There are deviations that they apply. There's all kind, and it's in our brief about what was the wrongful use. But if you do, we understand, but we really believe that on this record, it's so clear under the factors that you should send it back with instructions to enter the $6 million fee request. Thank you so much. I appreciate it, counsel.
We'll take the matter under advisement and issue our decision within the statutory period. That is the last case on our calendar for oral argument, so we will recess.
ahead. I'm just slow.
Thank you.
Besides, the weight of the law, there's a lot of paper.
Yeah.